Okay, lessons to Timothy. Moses, Elijah on the mountains. If you turn to 1 Kings, and I think, especially for this group, we don't have to go to all, some of these scriptures, but it says in 2 Timothy 1:7. Does anybody have that memorized?
Nope. I forgot. They've not given us the spirit of cowardness, but of power and love and correction.
Other translations will say fear, but if the word in the context is cowardice. Don't be a coward. Oh, man, I hate that word. Yeah. Don't be a coward. You don't want to be called a coward. Don't be a coward. But you don't want to be called a coward by Yahweh. Coward. But what is he telling Timothy that? Because on the next page it says in 2 Timothy 4:3-4.
There will be a season when the helpful teachings they will not endure, but according to their own covetings will they heap unto their teachers because they have itching ears and turn from the truth, they'll turn their ear unto stories.
Don't be a coward, Timothy. There's going to be times where people are going to abandon you. But they're not abandoning you, they're abandoning Yahweh. And 2 Timothy 1:7 is don't be a coward. And in between all that, 2 Timothy 1:15, the apostle Paul says, all of Asia has departed from me. Think about that. Can you imagine being an apostle Paul? All of Asia has departed? What was the point of all that? Could he see us reading the book of Ephesians? Could he see children thousands of years later memorizing the sword of the Spirit, the belt of truth? Could he see that? I bet you the Apostle Paul could see stuff like that though. Okay? I don't know if I can, but I need to. And part of this teaching is for us to see things like that. What's the benefit of going to Asia if all depart and there's none left? It's always profitable. Even if a book was never written on it, it's gonna make sense in the end. And you know, so Timothy, don't be a coward. All of Asia left me. I'm still here. You got me, buddy. I think about Elijah and Elisha. It's us, just you and I. All right, man. That's all we need, man. But in 1 Kings 19. So what are we signing up for? And in 1 Kings chapter 17, we won't go there, but just to kind of give you, Elijah shows up to the king of Israel, or his name is Elihu, I think it's Elihu, isn't it? Is how you actually say his name. Showed up to Achab or Ahab, and he goes, it's not going to rain for 3.5 years, or 3 years, until I say again. 3 years go by, why? Because they're wickedness. 2 years? Let's see. 2 years, you're right. 2 years. It's not going to rain because of their wickedness. You're going to reap this. So at first, probably, who the heck's that guy? Who cares? As far as I know, I don't see Elijah even before chapter 17. Who is this guy? I don't know. He didn't dress very nice. Sure is offensive. Didn't rain for 2 years. People start starving to death. And by the time we get to chapter 18, right around there, there's a guy named Obadiah. Achab says, you go this way, I'll go that way, so we don't have to slaughter our horses and our cattle. How bad is it? Mm-hmm. It is bad. It's really, really bad. And as long as I brought up Obadiah, this is real important, because Elijah stops the rain. The bidding of my mouth, the bidding is the mouth of Yahweh, the bidding of Elijah's mouth. Where is Elijah during these years?
Hiding.
Where?
In a cave.
By a brook.
By a brook. So he's living by a brook, not in a condo. Who's taking care of him?
Yahweh.
Crows.
Some ravens. What's a raven? Is that a clean or unclean?
That's unclean.
It's an unclean. It's bringing him sandwiches, meat and bread. He's filthy. Oh no, the ravens are back taking the bread. Oh, look at this, Yahweh. It's fresh today. Yahweh knows what he's doing. But here he is. Is that the ideal? He's a prophet of Yahweh. He probably wants to see people.
Yeah.
All by himself. And here it is. And then what happens when the brook dries up? Now the brook dries up.
No what?
No water. Don't worry. I send you to Zarephath, and there's a widow there who's getting ready to die because she's starving to death. She's going to make you something to eat. Oh, not getting any better. He goes, wonderful things happen, right? Wonderful things happen. Then Yahweh says, go to Akab. How bad has things been? And Elijah even says, there's none left. I'm the only one. Is that true?
No.
We're going to find out. No. Does Yahweh correct him? No. He doesn't. Elijah, you're a prophet. You're wrong. He didn't correct him. But Elijah, and you read through this, Elijah, we're going to find out, I'm not alone. Being separated, being alone could be so effective at times, because we're like a sheep. We want that, with the mentality that being a group. So then he goes and finds Obadiah. Who's Obadiah? Are you kidding me? He works in the Obama administration with the transvestites teaching kids. Who is this guy? He's working for the administration. Who is Obadiah? What does Obadiah mean? Yahweh is faithful. And what is he doing?
He's a priest.
He's basically a counter-op for Yahweh, working for the evil, cowardly Akab with Jezebel, who's the hands and feet of the adversary, killing all of Yahweh's prophets. And what is he also doing? He's hid Yahweh's prophets in caves. What's real important about that is that the caves had to be close to where he was living, or the vicinity. I think it was Jezreel. I forget where exactly it was. And this is where Alfred Edersheim said that these people had to be close to Obadiah, because there's no way you could conceal feeding that many people if it wasn't convenient. You can't have caravans going. So, do you think Elijah ever thought there's somebody like Obadiah at the same time in possibly a worse situation? Can you imagine working for Jezebel if you're righteous? If you're wicked, yeah, she should give me what I want. If you're righteous, can you imagine being around Akab if you're righteous? How lonely does this guy feel? He's risking his life. At any moment now, he's going to get caught lying to the enemy. How's Obadiah feel? Wow, both of them, it does not look like they have good ministries right now. Does it?
Yeah.
But both of them are advancing the ball at the same time for Yahweh. In football, the coaches we work with, I don't give a darn how you do it. Move the ball. Get the ball there, and then if you do it badly, we'll talk about that later. Advance the ball. First downs. You got to get 4 yards. It's first downs. There is no touchdowns. Touchdowns is just a result of first downs. Get the ball moving. But at the same time, both of these guys, Elijah, where have you been? I'm doing all the work. What do you mean you're doing all the work? I'm feeding all these people. He's doing counter ops. What? You're hiding with some widow and a brook on some spa? What does he think? We don't know. Scriptures don't say. But after all this, Akab comes. And you can imagine, here's Elijah. What would Elijah's heart? Now, I'm going to project some things. If I was Elijah, and before reading recently, I thought these things also. If I was Elijah, he's going to go to Mount Carmel with Akab. It's going to keep doing that. With Akab. And what's he going to do? Is there's going to be one of the biggest revivals ever. Fire's going to come down and consume the sacrifice the same way it did for Solomon. To signify Solomon is the king. Remember, there are coups before Solomon, right? Mm-hmm. Who is it? Is it Adonijah? Is it Abijah? The king's sons are being killed, and all Solomon's left. You know, the prophets knew, David knew. What about the rest of the people? No fire comes down out of heaven if Yahweh hasn't anointed this one. Boom! You can imagine Elijah, fire comes down. What's he thinking? Yes! Revival! Finally! Go wipe out the rest of the Baal and the Asherahs. Let's get Jezebel. And let's get this. And what's happening? He's going to run in front of Ahab's chariot. And where are they going to go? Where Jezebel lives. Jezreel. Where Akab lives. And he goes there. What do you think Elijah is expecting? I don't know. But there's a good chance he was expecting a revival. Now we're going to get things back together. It's going to be like the prophet and David, like Nathan and David, like Gad and David, a prophet with the king. Rule the people. You're the shepherd. I'm the prophet. Finally, things are back on track, possibly. And we're going to start in chapter 19, verse 1. And Akab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then sent Jezebel a messenger unto Elijah, saying, You know, she didn't say, she sent mercenaries, go chop off his head, like John the Baptist. Go cut his head off. Because Herod did just go cut John the Baptist's head off, right? A king can do that. Jezebel didn't do that. Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah. Where's Elijah? Don't know. He's probably eating kosher food, saying, so let the gods do, and so let them add, if by this time tomorrow I make not thy life as one of them. You have 24 hours, Elijah. She didn't kill him. What's going on here? What's happening with Elijah? And it would appear, and I'm going to stress appear, confusion with Elijah. He's a prophet, and he's going to take off. But it appears that he didn't get counsel from Yahweh. Because later on, Yahweh's going to go, what are you doing? Now, somebody else would read. We're going to be reading all the way quite a bit. Start at verse 3.
And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went unto the wilderness a day's journey and came and sat down under a certain shrub and asked for his life, that he might die and say,
okay, we'll pause right there.
So just kill me.
I've read that before, but have you ever been to that point?
In 3.5 years.
No, but in your ministries. Just kill me. It's not worth it anymore. I'm ready to die. That's it. He fled from Jezebel, but he's not afraid of dying. It's like Peter cutting off Malchus's ear and then denying Jesus Christ. What's going on here? He says, put away your sword, but I'm not supposed to do this. And here's Elijah. He flees for his life, but then he's going, what's going on here? It appears to be a lot of confusion. He goes, just kill me. Timothy, are you getting Timothy? Was Elijah a good prophet?
Yes.
Was he a prophet?
Yes.
Was he one of the top prophets? Yes. And where is he right here, Timothy? He's in a pit of despair, and he wants to die. Timothy, believers, Christians, in this life, you're issued the armor of Elohim, of Yahweh, to fight. And because you're in a war, you don't get to choose whether you're in or not. You get a choice whether you're good at it. There's going to be times that you're going to possibly going to want to die, even when you're being accurate, when you're not messing up. It's not, I messed up, this is going to be a consequence of my life. I've been obedient, and this is how bad it is. I'm done. And here's Yahweh, and he goes, take my life. Now somebody, enough now, if you can start reading again.
Enough now, Yahweh, take away my life, for no better am I than my father's. And as he lay and slept under a certain shrub, lo, a messenger touching him, who said to him, rise ye.
So it's really neat. So like, here's Yahweh's Raham. Raham is translated, it's going to be compassion with Rotherham.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily compassion, but it can mean the womb. And we're going to later on, we're going to read about Yahweh. Yahweh is, he spoke on Mount Sinai, and before he spoke to Moses alone. And it was so fearsome, it was so awesome, it means fear. People said, we're going to die. What did Yahweh just do with the prophets of Baal? Alfred Edersheim believes they didn't just kill him, they threw him off a cliff. 400 of them. After fire rained down. Who is this? Who is this Elohim? Boom, and then right here we're seeing Yahweh's Raham. Who is Elijah? He's exhausted. And Yahweh gives him sleep. And here he is in a deep sleep after he's gone,
kill me.
Just kill me. Does Yahweh respond? He's going through a tough time. I mean, understatement, right? He gives him a deep sleep, and what does Yahweh do? He sends an angel. Hey. Hey. Angel touches him. Rise. Eat. He feeds him. He's exhausted. And here's Yahweh, the soft hand of our Father. Here's his warrior. He could sub. I mean, you can imagine blood still being on here. You have to get rid of it to be clean. But you can imagine it wasn't too long ago with all the prophets of Baal. And just boom, here he is exhausted. Rise and eat. He eats, and what happens again? Another sub. What does sabbath mean? It means a ceasing. Cease. So he looked about. Okay, if somebody read verse 6.
So he looked about, and lo, at his head, a cake baked on hot stones and a cruse of water. And he did eat and drink, and then went back and lay down. And the messenger of Yahweh came again a second time and touched him and said, eat, arise, eat, because too much for thee is the journey. So he arose and did eat and drink and journeyed in the strength of that eating 40 days and 40 nights as for the mountain, as far as the mountain of Elohim, Horeb.
Horeb. Remember that name Horeb. And it looks like Horeb can also be called Sinai. But just remember this word Horeb. Mountain Horeb. Okay?
And he entered there into a cave and lodged there. And lo, the word of Yahweh came unto him and said to him, what dost thou hear, Elijah? And he said, very jealous have I been for Yahweh Elohim of hosts, because the sons of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thine altars have they thrown down, thy prophets also have they slain with the sword, and I alone am left, and they have sought my life to take it.
And is that true? Is he the only one? We're going to find out in a minute, okay? Go ahead.
And he said, go forth tomorrow and stand in the mountain before Yahweh. And lo, Yahweh passing by in a great... And a great and strong wind rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the crags before Yahweh. Not in the wind was Yahweh, and after the wind, an earthquake. Not in the earthquake was Yahweh, and after the earthquake, a fire. Not in the fire was Yahweh, and after the fire, the voice of a gentle whisper. And it came to pass...
This is me right here. And so what's going on with all this thunders, lightnings, winds? Yahweh is in things like that, and he speaks to people that way, doesn't he? Do you guys remember with the light, with Egypt, the voices? They heard the voices, thunderings and lightnings, but not to his loved ones. He spoke to these wicked people of Israel, but when it came to Moses, we speak face to face. And here's this prophet, and here's how is Yahweh going to talk to his prophet? Because a lot of people are going to say, well, it's always a still small voice. That's to the prophet. To some people, they're going to get thunder and lightning. You got to wake up. There is no small voice. I'm very upset with you. You can imagine Akka being sent a prophet. Boom! That's not a still small voice when Elijah sent back to Akka. But to the prophet, to Moses, Timothy, are you reading this? Look what happened. Is it true that he was the last one? No, it wasn't. Did he feel that way? Absolutely. Timothy, do you see that he feels like, it appears he feels like a failure. I have failed. Why?
Because that's what it looks like.
I am all alone. It appears I have failed, for I am all alone, Timothy. What does this mean? We don't necessarily know what was going on in the prophet's heart, but we can read some of these words from the text that he was imagining something else. That he was possibly imagining a revival or something. And he wasn't all alone. There was Obadiah. There were these other prophets, these other things, but he didn't know what was going on. Nevertheless, here it was. And look at Yahweh taking the time. And it says after this, there's a still small voice. And you know, here in the United States, my brother removed his hat. That's a sign of respect. When we pray, we move our hat. But with Israel, what do? They pray.
They fall down on their face, right?
They cover their head. You cover your head when you pray. Here's the Shema. Not the Shema, the Talit. It's the same thing, but with their custom, you cover your head when you went to go pray. You'll see people with these cloths over their head. They'll be praying like this. And it's in Alfred Edersheim says, before he goes and talks to Yahweh, what does he do? Verse 13, and it came to pass when Elijah heard it. What does he do? Edersheim's going to say that in reverence, he wraps his face with a mantle. He's going to go have a meeting. You can see he had vented two or three times. He's ready to die. Kill me. I have failed. And now, after the venting, after he vented, he hears the voice in reverence. He wraps it. You ever seen that where somebody's got a real problem? You go, just get it off your chest. Oh my goodness, how many times have you helped me? Where I finally vent. Ah, Jack, I quit! And then after I started talking, I started getting up. I'm like, I feel a lot better. He wrapped his face in the mantle and went forth and stood at the entrance of the cave. And lo, unto him a voice. And it said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he goes, again, I guess I got ahead of myself. And he said, very jealous have I been for Yahweh, Elohim of hosts, because the sons of Israel have not forsaken thee. We'll just skip all the way down. He repeats the same things. Verse 13, Yahweh said unto him, go return thy way towards the wilderness of Damascus. When thou enterest, then shalt thou anoint Hazael to be king of Syria, and Jehu, son of Nimshi, shalt thou anoint to be king over Israel. And Elijah, son of Shaphat of Abimelech, shalt thou anoint to be prophet in thy stead. Then shall it come to pass that him that escaped with the sword of Hazael shall Jehu... Was Yahweh planning vindication? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now he's not... You can, Edersheim believes that that Elijah was possibly thinking there should be vindication now. Right now. Right now. And after all this, Yahweh's not worried about the rest of these things. He's worried about who? His servant. Yeah. Get some sleep, man. Take a week off. Eat. Get his attention. give him the theatrics. The thunder of the lion. Okay, wake him up. He's up. What are you doing here, man? Yes, we're going to get them. Trust me, I'm really good. I got a good memory. I got everybody's social security numbers. I know where they live. And what does he do? He lets them in. And he says, you're going to be King Hazael, Jehu, and then you're going to anoint Elijah. Then he shall come, and then he goes on and he's going to say, and guess what happens after that? Elijah's back on track. But Timothy, where did he go? He wanted to die. Why did Yahweh record this? For us to not have to repeat some of these things. Not to pick on them, but for us to learn. Mm-hmm. Okay, be ready for these things. What did we just learn? It appeared things weren't going as he thought, so he felt like a failure. Okay, my ways are not your ways. All right. It appeared that he's failed because he's by himself. Remember that. It appears he failed because by himself. He wants to die. He's by himself. Kind of put all those things together. And no vindication, but the vindication comes and he gets right back on track. Boom. He goes off in retirement, carried up into the storm. There was a chariot, but he wasn't carried up in the chariot. It was the storm carried him up until about 15 years later? He gets called out of retirement. Calls out of retirement right later. This guy goes, back on the clock. How long am I going to be working again? I got some tea times. And I bet you to him it felt great. Because he loved working for Yahweh. And even the prophet right there, when he went and got retired, what was he doing? He was working for Yahweh in some other capacity, whether he was a farmer or whatever he was doing. But Yahweh gave him, okay, I understand you're burning out. Gotcha, man. I'll tap you out. I'll pull you off the field. Finish the play. I'll pull you off. Thank you. You can be an assistant coach from now on. Now, turn to Numbers chapter 11:11. So Timothy, don't be a coward. If you go through a situation, looks like you're failing or everybody abandons you. You can imagine the Apostle Paul giving a teaching like this to Timothy. Trust me, Timothy, I know what I'm talking about. All of Asia departed. Mm-hmm. I've been stoned. And Andrew Womack believes that he was resurrected because they don't just stone and throw your wall around. They kill you. Got back up, went back and started preaching again. Trust me, I'm tough. And it would appear that the Apostle Paul learned from Moses and Elijah to go, hey, you're not signed up for sissy stuff. 11, verse 11 through 15, and somebody would read that for me.
And Moses said unto Yahweh, wherefore hast thou thy servant come to grief, and wherefore have I not found favor in thine eyes, that thou shouldest lay the burden of all this people upon me? Did I conceive all this people, or I begat them, that thou shouldest say unto me, carry them in my bosom, as a nursing father carrieth a suckling unto the soil, which thou didst swear unto thy fathers? Whence should I have flesh to give to all the people? For they keep weeping by me, saying, oh, give us flesh that we may eat. Unable am I by myself to carry all those people, for they are too heavy for me. But if in this way thou art going to deal with me, slay me, I beseech thee. If I have found favor in thine eyes, let me not see my grief. Then saith Yahweh unto
Moses. That's good right there. So it's, but Moses... We're talking about the top prophets. Mm-hmm. Where is he? Kill me. Is this like Elijah? No. It might be like Obadiah. How am I going to take care of all these people and not die?
Yeah.
How am I going to feed all these prophets? Jezebel is right there. Holy cow. But here's Moses. What's the problem with his congregation? Nobody's showing up. There's too many. I can't. And it's not obedient sheep. These are. We got goats. We got wicked things. We got diseased things. We got, here this is, and Moses. And here's the whole thing. But he's a polar opposite of Elijah. He's not by himself. He's being crushed by too much. You see, the grass is always greener on the other side, Timothy. It's always greener on the other side. And if we're not careful, we're going to feel like it would just be better if I had it this way, if I had this ministry, if I had that. But here, this thing is Yahweh is going to work. He's going to work. But both of these guys, what had to happen first? They had to vent. Had they not vented, what would have happened? When did Yahweh say he and other people? After Elijah vented. Oh, just kill me. You want to know how bad it is? You want to talk? Let's talk right now. Just kill me. I'm ready to die. And it's funny with even Elijah. When he says the exact same thing twice, in my mind, I'm not going to say what he did. It sounds like you ever scripted your argument. Oh, I know exactly what I want to say when I run into the person I'm disagreeing with. He said it all, this whole script, and here I'm ready to die. After Moses vents, what does Yahweh do with Moses? He gives him 70 people. After. Are you done, Moses? Yeah, I'm done. Okay. Alright, moving on. You still want to die? No, I don't want to die. I want to see the promised land. I know you want to see the promised land. Come on, Moses. I got big perks. But a neat thing about both of these prophets, if you go down to Exodus chapter 33, Exodus chapter 33, 34 is going to be the Ten Commandments. Okay? In Deuteronomy 5, if you look at Deuteronomy 5, it's going to say this, the Ten Commandments are given at Mount
Horeb.
And they're going to say Horeb and Mount Sinai might be the same thing, but in Deuteronomy it's going to say Horeb. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Where was Elijah?
Horeb.
In a hole, or in a cave. And so right here, verse 33.
Chapter 33,
and here's Moses gonna go. It reminds me of how Yahweh talked to Elijah, this voice, hey, it's okay, man, it's okay.
What are you doing here?
Remind me of a coach talking. Here's a coach on the field, get over here, do it. Then his little daughter walks up, hi dad, oh hey baby, how you doing, be careful, you go back over there. Hey, coach, you talk like a baby. You shut up. That's my baby. Here's Moses and Elijah. And that's how he can be talking to us, too, if we're obedient. It says you love him if you obey him. Verse 18. And Moses said, show me, I pray thee, thy glory. Where are they? I led you. They're on Mount Horeb. It doesn't say that in Exodus. Deuteronomy 7. And he said, I will cause my goodness to pass before thee, and will proclaim myself by thy name, Yahweh, before thee, and I will show unto whom I may show favor, and I will show raham, unto whom I will have raham. But he said, thou cannot see my face. Isn't that interesting? He didn't ask to see his face. He asked to see his glory. And Moses, if Yahweh comes up with his face. And I'm like, interesting, I don't know what that means. I looked at the Hebrew words, I couldn't see. And so then, here's Yahweh, here's this intimate meeting that's coming, and Yahweh, let me see here, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not gonna see my face for no son of earth can see me and live. And Yahweh said, lo, I place near me, so then thou shalt station thyself upon the rock, and it shall be, while my glory passeth by, I will put thee in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover thee with my hand while I pass by. Alfred Edersheim believes that this is probably the same cave as Elijah was in. If Yahweh cleft the rock, do you think it was still there when Elijah was there? Same mountain, same Elohim. It doesn't say that, but here it is on the same mountain. And in this case with Moshe, is how you say his name, what's going to happen? Moses, you ready to talk? Here's this Elohim and Raham. 23, then I'll take away my hand and thou shalt see behind me, but my face thou shalt not see. And then Moses does the tables. He gets to work. Deuteronomy 5:2 says that's Mount Horeb. And then verse 6, so Yahweh passed before him and proclaimed Yahweh, Yahweh, an El of Raham. That's for compassion and of favor. Raham is, it can mean womb. Can you see Elijah being in a womb when he was being, was fleeing for his life? And here's Moses being protected in favor, which is Hannah. Slow to anger. Does he get angry? Yeah, he just got a long fuse. Abundant in hesed and emet, faithfulness. Keeping hesed to 1,000 generations, forgiving iniquity, transgressions, a sin, though he leave not utterly unpunished, visiting iniquities of the fathers upon the sons and upon the sons' sons, unto the third and to the fourth generation. Then Moses hastened and bent his head towards the earth and bowed himself down. It's like the same Elohim, two different, completely different ministries, both of them on mountains. And what do we have? Well, we have less excuses than them because we have their lives to read. We have so much more information to read to find out these things and to learn from them. Both of them wanted to die. Timothy. If you're being obedient, there's a chance you're going to want to die. There's a chance. It doesn't mean you failed. It can feel that lonely. What else did we learn? Both of them had to vent before relief came. Who are you talking to? Remember that. You know, sometimes I witness to people and I'm like, they go, I don't know if I believe in a creator and this and that. I'm like, who do you think you're talking to? Oh, if he shows up with a bouquet and flowers, he gets down on his knees, kisses your butt, baby, you'll believe in him? This guy spoke the universe into existence. He smashed and he crushed Egypt. He can wipe you out like that. You know you're made of dirt, and he owns that dirt. You know the breath that is in your lungs belongs to him. Daniel said that to Nebuchadnezzar. That's how you approach him. And so... So when you got issues, Yahweh can read your mind, but that's not how you approach an Elohim that you have reverence, that you have awe for. You should sit down and say, permission to speak freely, sir. And you know, in my own life, with my ventings that happened, I don't think I've ever planned one of them. But a couple of them has been, I'm at the rope's end. I'm about ready to quit. This is too hard. And I gotta be honest. I can't hold out anymore. I can't do it. And then I fall down, and a lot of the time it's not even premeditated. I'm just at a point, and I get down, and I go, I gotta talk. We gotta talk. Because I can't see me continuing. And then, boom, tears and emotions start pouring out. And then who's there? It's him. Because, I got you. Feel better? Throwing up? Go, you got a little bit more now. You're okay. Go ahead, take your time. I know you're vomiting. It's okay. And here he is rubbing your back and they sit up. All right, you okay? You want a napkin? I got you. How you feel? I feel better. Yeah. Okay. Let me give you a hug. All right, let's go get back to work. And here I believe that Moses coming down, his face shining at one point. I bet you Elijah's face was shining. And when he saw Hazael and Jehu, they're looking going, holy cow! Did he look? You can see something. He's right back on his mission. And Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus Christ, before his suffering, it says in Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, how did he endure the death of the cross? It said he couldn't have done it if he didn't focus on the joy before him. It was he endured the death of the cross. How? The joy that was set before him. What was set before him? He's going to sit at the right hand of Yahweh Elohim. He's going to resurrect all those who've gone to sleep. He's going to bring back David. There's going to be 1,000-year millennium. All these things. He's bringing them all back. Did Jesus Christ know how much his father felt for David? Did he know how much he felt for Abraham? They're dirt. Dust you are, dust you will be. All that pressure was on him. I'm going to get these guys up. You're going to get to do it. How am I going to do it, Dad? Well, how did I do it? Well, you took some dirt and you breathed in them. All right. And he focused on that, and he focused on that. And before Yehoshua Mashiach suffered the death of the cross, he took the three, Peter, James, and John. Who were these three guys? The scriptures say, if you look at it, they were the three that continued to volunteer and go, I'm the guy who wants to call down fire, nuke these suckers.
Yeah.
Here's Peter cutting ears off, and they're volunteering. They're on board. They accelerated. More than a rest, he takes him where? To the Mount of Transfiguration. And what do they see? It says vision. Of who? The resurrected Moses. On a mountain. The resurrected Elijah. On a mountain. Do you think Jesus Christ ever thought about those two guys wanting to die? And Yahweh and Elohim of Aham, Amet, covering them? Do you think Yehoshua ever thought about that? Yes, I'm going to see them. And those two are just a type of Jesus Christ. And they get to see the resurrected Mashiach, the vision of all three of them. And they had that. And then he goes, don't tell this vision to anybody. No, wait, don't tell this vision. And they would have had that vision to hold on to because what was going to happen next?
Yeah.
It was just the beginning of all kinds of things. Just like Elijah running for his life or Moses, a pastor of a mega church, being crushed by it, whatever it was, and here it was. And you can imagine, what if Moses, what if when he flees from there, if he could go back again, and all of us could do things a little bit better in our lives, we look back, oh, I could have done this a little bit better, I could have done this. And even if I did something right, I look back, I could have done it better. Can you imagine if Elijah could have saw a vision of him on the mountain with the Mashiach? It's not about who's with you, man. It's about quality, not quantity. It's about you being my minister at the resurrected and the new earth. And here's Moses, a shepherd of too many people. They're not worth it! No, they're not. But the people you will be shepherding in the next life will be. Can you see him, Moses? Can you see the land of promise? Can you see where you're going? What are people going to get to read about our lives? I don't know. Moses didn't know we were going to be reading about this. Timothy, did Elijah know we were going to be reading about this? Did Elijah and Moses know there's going to be a vision of them on the Mount of Transfiguration? No. What are people going to get to read about you? And are you going to give up? Are you going to quit because it gets too hard? You're going to get crushed or you don't understand? And be ready, because if you are a good servant and you are authentic, you're going to go through these things. But what did you learn, Timothy? Be ready to vent respectfully. Bring it up. It doesn't have to go so far. You don't have to wait until finally you explode. Talk. Turn to John chapter 19. I heard a teaching once. He goes, you were born into a war. You did not start. You have no choice whether you're in it or not. You can't control whether you win, but you can control whether you quit or not. Are you going to quit? You're going to quit. I'm not going to quit. And if you feel like you're going to quit, faith comes by hearing and says, I'm not going to quit. I'm not a coward. I'm not a coward. I'm not a coward. I'm not a coward. I'm not going to quit. John chapter 19. This is where we'll wrap up. Chapter 19, verse 30. If somebody would read that for me.
When therefore he had received the vinegar, Yahushua said, it is finished, and bowing his head, delivered up his spirit. The Jews
therefore... It is finished. Three words in English. One word in Greek. You know what word that is? It's one word. He completed everything. It's done. That's it. The Greek word, Strong's number 5055. It is finished as telio. Telio. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Telio comes from the word Strong's 5056. Telosis. Telios, this ministry, complete, full, mature, Strong's 5046 also comes from 5056. His last words were, "It's complete. It's telios." And that's our objective. What's going to be written about you, and that is our, we can learn from Moses and Elijah, but then we can finish like our Lord and our Savior. Father, we thank you for your words. And we thank you for coaching us up and putting people in our lives to help us. And know, my sons and my daughters, that there's nothing that you're going through that I don't understand. I will minister to you. And there are some things that you're going through. It's almost like a teenage girl who's 12 or 13 that's just confusing because of the cycles in her life of hormones and what are these swings and what is all this stuff. And there are times in your life that they're just going to be difficult and they're confusing. And you're not going to understand me, but what I do ask you to do is I ask you to understand the death, burial, and resurrection of my son. That I've given you certain words to anchor yourself, say, if I did not spare my own son, what would I not give to you? I also say in my word that if I feed the birds of the heavens and I care for you even more, the hairs of your head are numbered, will I not meet your needs? Know these things and take these things in consideration and give yourself strength so that I can advance you. And not just to advance you, I'm not just an employer that's going to give you a gigantic retirement, because the resurrection is your retirement. But in this life, I'll give you bonuses and bonuses and bonuses and use your life as an opportunity to advertise how good I and my son are. So strengthen your weak knees, receive my discipline, and run your race in a way in which to win like my son.
Hallelujah.